This is All In. I'm Jeannie Lindsay. Today we're talking about teachers and school staff in Indiana and how mental health issues have had an impact during the pandemic. If you have questions or comments on our show today, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail. Call us at 866-476-3881. Just give your name, where you're calling from, and a quick question or comment, and we'll do our best to get it into the conversation. Again, that's 866-476-3881. You can also send us high-quality voice messages with our smartphone app called All In Vox Pop. It's free and easy to use. Just search for All In Vox Pop on your phone's app store. We're joined now by four guests. Jennifer Mitchell is principal of Perry Central Elementary School. Hi, Jennifer. Jody French is principal of Perry Central Junior Senior High School. Lori Desitel is an assistant professor at Butler University's College of Education. And Joy Sunday is president of the Indiana Association of School Nurses. So just to dive right in, Jennifer, starting with you, can you explain what your school looks like right now? How are you handling teachers and students coming into the building? What do the operations look like?
So, hi, Jeannie. So we are in a hybrid model, actually. We have started this at the just this last week was our first week. And so we have half of our students coming on Mondays and Tuesdays, and then the other half coming on Thursdays and Fridays. Everyone is virtual on Wednesdays. And then on your days that you're not here, then you're learning virtually at home. However, we do have childcare support for our younger students, and we have several families taking advantage of that. Our teachers are at full capacity on campus all 5 days, as long as they're staying out of quarantine. So we've been pretty fortunate this week. Last week was a little bit of a different situation, but that's kind of what our school building looks like right now.
Yeah, and can you talk a little bit about how things have changed in terms of how teachers and school staff have been working?
Yeah, so we're actually learning a completely new way to teach students. And so we've had all different formats this year so far. We were fortunate enough to stay in person up until November the 2nd. But from the beginning, our families could opt out of going in person and do completely online. We are a firm believer, our school superintendent, Jody French, and I and our administrative team, firm believers of public education being a public servant to our community. And so we wanted to have that opportunity for our families to opt out. We have many families with grandparents living with them or other health issues, and we wanted them to have the safety and feel that safety from learning at home. So all of our teachers, 100% of our teachers, are learning how to teach both online and in person throughout the school year. So it's been a huge learning curve for all of us, and our teachers have been rock stars through it all. We've had lots of PD throughout the year. Jody and I have paired up a lot throughout our virtual days and tried to help teachers just learn new formats and ways to present information. It's just a constant ongoing professional development. We have several teachers in a digital technology learning grant right now, and they have some things that they want to share with other team members. And we are just constantly meeting weekly to learn and grow in the area of teaching both in person and online.
So, Jody, I wanted to ask you, I mean, what have you heard from teachers and staff early on in the pandemic about what they need right now? What have been some of their main concerns, and how have those changed over time?
Yeah, early on, our teachers were very anxious about, you know, the whole situation. The springtime was I think that we realized that a lot of our students really struggled to work online and at home, and trying to make connections with them. It was very difficult. And so early on, we just had to try to support our teachers and help them know that whatever they were doing, it was going to be okay. We all just had to work hard. And the main thing is just to do what's best for our kids. And so I think that that's really what they needed was just that type of support and permission to maybe take a break or step out. We added a couple virtual days. We were in person all through October. And so we added some virtual days so that they would have some extra time to gather their thoughts. And that really helped them in our junior senior high building.
And when it comes to, you know, navigating their needs and the community's needs, can you talk a little bit about, I mean, the process to figure out all of this out, you know, getting consensus, everybody kind of on board on the same page? Was that a challenge? What was that like?
Well, we learned to take it one day at a time. And it is a challenge because it seemed like we were trying to hit a moving target all the time. But our community has been very supportive of the school, and we just can't thank them enough. We believe in over-communicating, providing the community with information, all the information that we had. And all in all, they've learned to trust us. And that has been very helpful throughout this process.
Yeah, absolutely. So Lori, moving to you, I'm curious, how would you characterize the mental and emotional health of school staff in Indiana at this point? I mean, what have you been hearing?
So, Jeannie, it's fragile. I mean, I'm going to be very honest. This is an extremely challenging time, not only for our educators, but for school staff, for students. You know, this pandemic, I just listened to Jennifer share about how teachers had to learn how to teach in new ways on top of the trauma and the adversity that this pandemic has carried into our communities. And so we know that our brains and bodies struggle with unpredictable chronic stress. And that's what this pandemic has been about. We wake up and we don't know what the next day is going to be, you know, whether we are going to be quarantined as a class, whether, you know, we're going to have teachers out, you know, whether a family is in need. It's also isolated us, and connection, attachment builds brains and bodies. And for us as adults, you know, that connection literally can be life-saving when we feel so isolated. So, you know, these conditions are really traumas for teachers, for staff, for parents, for, you know, everybody that sits beside our children and youth in this time. So it's very important for everybody to understand how significant the impact of these swift, rapid changes have been.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's a very tumultuous time. And, you know, part of that is, you know, keeping track of what's going on. I know people have talked a lot about data and, you know, how to kind of illustrate what's been going on. Can you talk a little bit about maybe what's being done or, you know, can anything be done to collect data on, you know, what is happening with our school staffers and to get a sense of, you know, for who needs help and how to help them?
Well, I think maybe the school principals can talk to, you know, what they're specifically doing. But, you know, we know that all behavior is communication, and behavior signals what's happening, you know, underneath. So, you know, when you see children and adolescents and adults carry in the unsettledness of a nervous system, I mean, this is affecting how, you know, we're sensing and feeling and behaving and interacting in our worlds, then, you know, some of the data can be seen already in kids that, especially our secondary students who have kind of checked out. You know, many of the students have not had adequate access to technology. And so there's some, you know, kind of a sense of hopelessness, kind of detached. So we're seeing work, you know, again, not completed. I know teachers are extremely worried about the number of students failing. And that concerns me because we are crisis teaching in this time. This is pandemic teaching or, you know, virtual teaching or hybrid teaching. I mean, we are crisis teaching. So the traditional worries of test scores and, you know, completion of work need to be put aside right now because we see bodies of adults and children with emotional contagion You know, people, our feelings are contagious. And so we need to be aware that we've got to take care of each other, you know, to kind of create that homeostasis, that sense of balance, and knowing that, you know, we need to be living in the moment right now and just taking one step at a time.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Joy, really quickly, we just have a couple minutes before our first break, but we'll be able to get back to this right after that. But just to start off before we get there, can you talk a little bit about the role of school nurses, you know, how that's changed and what they've taken on during the pandemic?
Thank you. Yes, I think the pandemic really has brought out how essential every employee is within the school system. We started working on our plans during the summer, seeing what it will look like. And that has definitely changed throughout the last couple months. Our school system is 100% open. We do have e-learning days on Wednesdays, which gives us a chance for the teachers to recoup, get their lessons down as they are doing both remote teaching and in-house teaching simultaneously. So that being said, the nurses really are spending coordinated care, identifying those children that come back positive, trying to find those, identify those children that may just have some congestion, may just have a runny nose. Those are the kids that are ultimately coming out positive. And so we are trying to stay one step ahead of who we need to identify, how we need to space out the kids. Really working as a core with our pediatric physician groups and, you know, collaborating with them, collaborating with a local health department, and building the trust of parents. The start of the school year, when we would unfortunately having to make those phone calls that kids were needing to be quarantined because they were within 6 feet, longer than 15 minutes, trying to have families understand, yes, even though there's a mask, even though there's a divider, your child still is subject to a quarantine situation.
So we'll just take a quick break and we'll just hop right back into that. So we'll be back after a quick break. We're talking about mental health issues for teachers and school staff. I'm Jeannie Lindsay. Back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Jeannie Lindsay. We're talking today about mental health issues for teachers and school staff in Indiana. We'd love your questions and comments on the topic. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave us a voicemail, including your first name and where you're calling from, at 866-476-3881. We're joined now by four guests: Jennifer Mitchell, principal of Perry Central Elementary School; Jody French, principal of Perry Central Junior Senior High School; Lori Desitel is an assistant professor at Butler University's College of Education; and Joy Sunday is president of the Indiana Association of School Nurses. So, Joy, I'd like to come back to you. We were talking about the role of school nurses and how that's changed during the pandemic. I know we've had a show earlier this year about school nurses, and a big concern is the time to do all that it takes to be a school nurse. Can you talk a little bit about that time problem and maybe how that's changed or evolved as the fall has gone on?
Sure. The time factor, we went from a time where we aren't able to close our door, we're not able to have lunch, to taking care of the chronic conditions, be ready for those emergency situations, be ready for, you know, whatever may walk in the door at the time. So we've gone to from just having that situation to also dealing with the COVID. We had the high school, they were making 40 phone calls a day. So any illness that was reported and called in, we would follow up as nurses to see what that illness was. Is it COVID related? Is it just an ear infection? Whatever it was, just so we had a peace of mind that who was coming to school that next day, at least we had triaged. So I do feel very strongly that that has helped with what we're doing and the amount of positives we are seeing. So it's exhausting, the behind the scenes, the 24/7, just waiting on those phone calls to come in. Friday nights at 8 o'clock, here comes a call. There's a positive student. So those are the situations where we are on call 24/7. I know I couldn't do my job without the help of my fellow nurses. We're lucky enough that we have a complete all RN staff, and I've been the coordinator for the COVID initiative here within our school district. So it has been beneficial, I think, to have one person coordinating and being responsible for each of the cases I have been part on and have overseen. So that has been amazingly wonderful for that. In that being said, we don't have enough school nurses. There is a nurse shortage. So we're struggling trying to keep staff going as far as nursing when we even started the school year out with not enough staff and no substitutes available for us. So we've learned to lean on each other. We know sometimes we're a walking, target, and that's okay. Because what we have seen in staff, students, is the reassurance they're trying to figure this all out. They know from day to day that they don't know whether they're going to get that phone call, the quarantine. It's just, my nurses are exhausted, but as nurses are, we put our head down and we just take on whatever situation is placed in front of us. Shout out to all those school nurses that are out there. Every school nurse has its own issues. One of the frustrating parts are, with the new guidelines, CDC releases 7-10 day new guidelines. Well, if you look at what the real world is showing and what Northwest Indiana is showing, is we see the numbers. We see where the family contacts, family positives are much different than the school environment direct contacts. And the numbers of positives coming out of a home versus coming out of a school are just unbelievably different. So as nurses, we are looking at that. We are analyzing that data for every child that leaves the system on a direct contact. We are monitoring them to make sure that we're tracking, if and when they come back, and making sure, as well as we know, that they are not COVID positive.
Right.
One of the frustrating parts is asymptomatic kids. I always tell people there's probably 10% of the kids in every school building all the time probably being positive, and we don't even know it. So that is the frustrating part, is it's a game. We're investigators. We're just out there trying to solve the puzzle.
Right. There's so much and so little time, but it just doesn't stop. So Jennifer, talking to you, I mean, what are some of the things that you've done at your school to help staff with these pressures, maybe alleviate some of that or offer them, some sort of relief?
So thanks to Dr. Desitel for giving us some of these ideas. Last year, a couple of years ago, we've had some things in place for a little while, which makes the stress of the pandemic a little bit lighter, possibly for some of our teachers. But one of the things that we have in both buildings is what we call an R&R area, which basically stands for reset and regulate. And so with the study that we've done with Dr. Desitel and the books that she has written, we have learned that we have to, as adults, model what it looks like to regain composure. And when we are to a point where we are stressed and we can't handle it anymore, we have to have trust among our learning community, which is basically any staff member who works here, to basically say, I need a break, or I've got to go for a walk. I have to step away for just a little bit. And so we have these R&R areas, which contain a massage chair, some little bottles of water, And of course, the much needed chocolate that everyone needs every now and then. And we just have a little private place where people can go and get some time, some quiet time, and just to step away from all the chaos and craziness that's going on around us, and be able to regain composure and be able to re-enter that classroom or finish working with that student. Students, and Dr. Desitel can go into more detail about this, I'm sure, but students feed off of our stress and our responses. And so when our staff come to work already stressed out because they got a call about a child at their own home who had to be quarantined, or they just had a rough night, or somebody's sick in their family, whatever it might be, our students feel that stress immediately. And so we just have to make sure that we communicate with each other. They know that they can buzz our offices at any time and just say, hey, can someone come down here for 10 minutes? And if they need to visit the R&R room, or if they need to go for a walk, they know that that is available to them. And these are just best practices that we have found, prior to the pandemic, but definitely a much needed service during this time of uncertainty and chaos, to be completely honest.
Right. And so how do you know what's effective? I mean, what are there certain things that you've done that seem to have made the biggest difference? Or how do you evaluate or receive, feedback about the things that you're trying to do to benefit your staff?
So we actually we have a social emotional learning specialist through Project Aware, which has been amazing for us. And she has really taken the lead on what we need as a staff and what we need for our students. And so we survey them. We've surveyed them a couple times already this year. So what do you like about this area? What do you need from us? How can we do more to support you? And so a lot of it is just anonymous surveys that our staff members can complete and send to us. We've had Dave jokingly say, I'd like to have a maid at my house, or I'd like to have an hour prep instead of a 40-minute prep, whatever it might be. But we just ask them, what do you need from us? And they're pretty honest with things. And we try to do some fun things. So we're hiding snowmen this week and next week. And when they find a snowman, they bring it to the office and they win a $10 gift card. And so it's minor things, but for teachers, it's a pretty big deal. And we just try to keep their morale boosted, and we try to keep them happy. And so basically, if we have to buy chocolate for the rest of the year out of our own pockets, then we're going to do that, because if that's going to help them, then that's what we can do. But we really just survey them, and we just have that family of trust built in, that they're going to be honest with us, and they're going to let us know what their needs are.
Yeah, absolutely. Hopefully my editor's listening. That chocolate comment, shouts out to Scott. But Jody, moving to you, I mean, I'm curious how you see your role as a school leader and kind of how that's changed, especially in this conversation. I mean, what sort of things that you've been thinking about, I mean, your responsibility and what you think school administrators need to do in their positions to help their staff?
I think it has, changed a lot. We are, especially with this pandemic, and luckily we have a strong central office that has said we need to let go of these standards, because right now we have to take care of the mental health of our faculty and staff and our community, and we have to make sure our students are safe. And so we are starting with those two, and then the teaching and learning come third. And that goes right out there with Maslow's hierarchy of needs as well. And so we really are focusing on self-care of our teachers, making sure that they have what they need. They feel comfortable with their workloads and that they're not too stressed out. Another thing that our corporation is doing is we are paying for our teachers to attend yoga classes. And we also pay for counseling services as well. And I think that all of that is just a comprehensive, 2 years ago, we weren't thinking about that at all. And so all of this has really helped us with the pandemic and helped our faculty and staff feel comfortable moving through this very uncertain time.
Yeah. So Lori, there are obviously a lot of different ways to address mental and emotional health. I mean, what advice would you give to a school that's maybe not sure how to handle this or you know, this is kind of new territory for them? What would you say?
Well, I think it's very important, as both principals have shared, is the connection for staff right now. Because, you know, part of this pandemic, when you're virtually teaching, hybrid teaching, you do feel very isolated. And you can begin to, you know, it's so interesting. Our thoughts create these feelings, and it becomes this perpetual cycle of, you know, just thinking these negative thoughts and then feeling this negative emotion. And when you're isolated and you don't have anyone, you know, to really connect and talk about that, you know, those issues, it's hard. So some of the things that I think are really, really important right now, really understanding, teaching our staff about, you know, why they're feeling the way they're feeling. We are no different than our students. When we understand the science beneath our behaviors and beneath our feelings, we feel relieved, you know, to know not to, you know, pathologize what's happening, but to really understand that, you know what, this anxiety I'm feeling in my chest, I can't take a deep breath. You know, why am I feeling tense all the time? What's wrong with me? There's nothing wrong with you. Our bodies are adapting in every moment to the experiences that are in front of us. So I think teaching our staff just a little bit about, you know, how to, you know, bring that brain and body back into balance. And we know that breath and movement are two of the most researched ways that we can find our own calm. There's so much research on taking deep breaths, just three with maybe an extended out breath, taking a 5-minute walk, you know, journaling for a couple of minutes, just writing out your thoughts. Dan Siegel, you know, always shares, you know, with us that what you can name, you can tame, and what shareable is bearable. So understanding that the language of the body is really about sensation and feelings. So many of the practices that we are sharing with students when they are feeling rough or dysregulated are as effective, if not more effective, for the adults in a building. So, you know, really planning time at the beginning of a meeting, at the end of a day, in a department meeting, in a PLC, and a staff meeting, for teachers to journal, to, you know, to use art, you know, to draw, to color, to share. Those are extremely important practices that we know can be very regulating to the nervous system.
So we have a couple minutes before our next break, but just really quickly, I mean, can you talk a little bit about how much of an impact, you know, recognizing and communicating those needs has, and what needs to happen for people to better understand, you know, the emotional and mental regulation and feel more comfortable talking about it, asking for help?
Well, I think that's beginning to happen, but change is slow and change is challenging. And we typically, or I should say not typically, but traditionally don't talk about mental health in the ways we need to. And my hope is that through this pandemic, that we can all acknowledge and be very aware of how chronic, unpredictable stress has impacted all of us. And we can begin to really relate to our students who carry in some significant trauma and adversity, you know, in ways that we weren't able to before. But I really feel that it is, you know, the openness and the awareness and the being able to talk about it are becoming, you know, very normal and needed. And so talking about how it impacts the brain and the body are just so important. And we've got this incredible, it's called the wandering vagus nerve. And it literally connects our, you know, whole body to the brain. And when we learn about that nerve, we can put a brake on it. And we do that by these simple, really easy practices we can do in 10 seconds, like humming or gargling when you drink a bottle of water, or taking 3 deep breaths, or splashing your face with cold water, in your shower in the morning for 30 seconds, turning off the hot water and allowing cold water to run, you know, down your back and feeling that sensation. So there's so much research now with practices that we can implement, and not only implement those, but really understand how it's impacting our own neuroanatomy.
Yeah, so a better understanding of how those physical, you know, things affect the, you know, the brain operation and the emotions that stem from all of that. Yeah, absolutely. So we are going to head to another break. We'll be right back. We're talking with a live panel of guests about mental health issues for teachers and school staff during the pandemic. If you have questions or comments for our guests today, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. I'm Jeannie Lindsay. Back in 90 seconds, this is All In. This is All In. I'm Jeannie Lindsay. Back now to our discussion on mental health issues for teachers and school staff in Indiana. And as always, we love to hear your questions and comments. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave us a short voicemail with your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. Back with our guests, Jennifer Mitchell, principal of Perry Central Elementary School, Jody French, principal of Perry Central Junior Senior High School, Lori Desitel is an assistant professor at Butler University's College of Education, and Joy Sunday, president of the Indiana Association of School Nurses. So, Joy, we're talking about solutions and what administrators can do. I'm curious what your relationship and what you've heard other school nurses' relationship with administrators has been like throughout the pandemic.
I think the leadership is not... I think they are getting an eye-opening for what we have been doing and what we go through also emotionally, physically, just trying to evaluate the risk versus participation. Our staff has been wonderful. At first, they were like real anxious and saying we shouldn't be here. But as time has gone on, as we have worked with them, the nurses within the buildings, that reassurance. Principals are right there sometimes at our sides, working right along with us. We know that we need to keep going and being strong for the kids, but yet have that compassion and understanding. So they have been supportive in our role, and, you know, it is an eye opening, and I think that is a wonderful thing to see. You know, phone call last night with a principal that works in the surrounding school building, and his wife works with us. He said, "You don't call at night. I don't want your phone call coming in." But they have always been right there at our sides through this whole pandemic.
Yeah, and obviously with things shifting so much this year and with the expansive role that school nurses have, I mean, I'm curious, what do you think you need from administrators the most right now? What sort of support, you know, would you love to see more of?
What I would love to see more on is more understanding that we are professionals within a building. We are right there along with the teachers, with the education, with the unknown of what we are facing every day. We our game needs to be on every day. We can't just say we're having a bad day, because we have to be ready for that emergency situation that may arise. And it's very interesting, because I have a brand new nurse that was hired the first day of school. And she really did not know what school nursing was about. And she has just jumped in. And when I kind of asked her, I said, hey, I'm going on the show. And she basically just said school nursing during the global pandemic has rocked her world. She says it's both exhilarating and exhausting. And she never imagined the experience, the same demands placed on the school nurses as she had when she was working with the vulnerable population in neonatology and on an NICU floor. She says, you know, we want what's best for the kids and the families, and we want them in school for their mental, physical, and emotional health. And she said, that's what drives me every day to do the grind of making the phone calls and the behind the scenes work to stay in front of this deadly virus. So those are kind of the types of struggles. Just having little notes on our desk saying, you know, good job. We know how much you're putting in. I got a note card sent to my home, which really, you know, somebody took the extra effort to make sure it got mailed to my home. That just made my day that somebody really is seeing what we are doing and, you know, how to go through it. I try as the director of the nurses here within, you know, the note cards. We all walk around with a 6-foot stick, measuring spaces and environments. So we had a Christmas get together. Yes, we were spaced out 10 feet apart for, you know, our luncheon. But we had a stick decorating contest for Christmas. Who could, you know, come up with the best decorated 6-foot stick, wall of hearts, in a showcase over at the high school with everybody making comments for the nurses. So those are the little things that really touch our hearts through this all. When families are thanking us for what we're doing, they're thanking us for, you know what, if you hadn't have told me that congestion, I needed to follow up with a doctor or stay home a couple days. You know, we're doing the right thing. May not always seem that way, but we are doing the best we can in keeping everyone safe in this environment. We have gone through kids' mental health. We know the environments in the home is not the best place for some of these children. So that's another reason we like to be able to touch these kids 7 hours a day. We know we are providing that safe environment for these kids during that period of time. So that is always, you know, has us a little bit more anxious, you know, when these kids are at home for extended period of time. Everybody gets a little frustrated. You know, being with somebody 24/7 is never easy. And so you add the pandemic onto that, no outlets, not a whole lot of places to go, really can, you know, cause, you know, that mental health or that tipping point in what's going on in the environment also. So we try to be very cognizant, very aware, making those phone calls, asking those questions for every child that we are talking with, every adult we're talking with, trying to find little points that we can say, oh, they're a little struggling, and get them some resources to go into their house or to help the families.
Yeah, yeah. And that's a great segue into our next questions. You know, obviously schools, you know, serve students and families. So Jennifer, can you talk a little bit about, you know, what you've seen about how teachers' relationships with their students have been like during this pandemic? I mean, how has that changed?
Well, as Jody mentioned, we try to find unique ways to connect to our students since we're not physically able to connect like we always have been. And we have found that our students tend to chat with us throughout the evening. We had one teacher who told me that she had a video chat at 2:30 in the morning come through her phone. And she didn't answer it, but she said she asked the student the next morning. She said, did you video chat me at 2:30 in the morning? She goes, yeah, I couldn't sleep. And so those are the types of difficulties that our teachers are finding, is setting those boundaries and those limits. But we also want students to connect with us at any time that they need us. And so we're finding that we have a lot more connection with our parents, because especially with the younger students, because any messages that we send really can't go directly to their email because they may not be able to read the email yet. And so we're really trying to we probably communicated with parents more so during this pandemic than we have before. Just because of the need to let parents know of homework that is missing, or new assignments or new videos that are posted for students. And so our students are also finding unique ways to connect with us, whether that be through Google Meets or Google Hangouts, or even trying to do a little Snapchat video or a Snapchat Messenger for our teachers. And it's really hard to find a good balance with that. But at this time, we feel like that we're going to try to meet their needs however we can, even if that's at 9:30 at night, whenever they're struggling to get work done, or they need, they're hungry or something like that. We've also really worked with our kitchen staff are phenomenal. And when we are all virtual, we do food pickup and drop-offs 2 days a week. And when we're on hybrid on Wednesday, whenever everyone is at home, they get 3 days worth of food, and that's for anyone in preschool through 12th grade from our campus. And then we trade things. We're a very rural area, and so some of our kids are on buses for an hour and 15 minutes to an hour and a half. And so even just to get to school to pick up and drop off paperwork or homework or a new Chromebook, if the microphone died, then we're sending those on our buses to those pickup points, so parents can only have to drive 5 or 10 minutes to the nearest pickup spot. So we've just been very creative and really thinking outside the box of ways to connect with these kids and families as much as we can.
Yeah. And Jody, can you talk a little bit about, I mean, the effect that, you know, remote learning or, you know, the way that things have been going has had on school staff and, you know, more broadly, school culture? I know that that's been something that's come up in, you know, my reporting on this. So can you talk a little bit about the effect on that?
I think that Dr. Desitel mentioned that we're just missing that connection right now, especially in hybrid. I got into a couple classrooms today and, you know, there's only one student at each table, maybe, and they're just sitting there quietly. And so the feel in the classroom is just a lot different right now. And I think that our students are missing that connection, and our teachers are too. And so we're trying to find ways to keep them engaged, like with surprise and delights. Today we had hot chocolate for all of our students, and tomorrow they all get a cookie. Just doing some little things just to try to make it fun, and make sure that we're staying connected. And I think that our teachers do worry about our students. I think they worry about their mental states. And then I think they also worry about their learning, obviously, and what this pandemic is going to mean for our students who are struggling through this over the next 3 or 4 years as we try to fill in the gaps that are occurring. So I just think that they're really it does weigh on our teachers because they care so much about our kids. But we try to really talk to them about not only focusing on what they can control and just stay connected. I was thinking that when I first started in education, they told you to never share your cell phone or your Facebook, you know, never friend a student on Facebook or any other social media. And now we're doing that. We have a lot of the kids' cell phone numbers and they're texting, the teachers are reaching out to them directly. I know I get a lot of Facebook messages. That's a way that individuals can communicate if they don't have good cell service or if they don't have any minutes left on their phones and they have Wi-Fi. And so, like Jennifer said, we're just trying to get creative, and basically anything goes. And I think that our teachers, it makes them feel better when they do feel like they're making a difference in the kids' lives.
So we're talking about, you know, mental health and isolation is something that's come up. So Lori, I'm curious, can you talk a little bit about, you know, the effect of isolation that it has on people when they're not around others as much as they usually are, and what you see some of the long-term impacts of, you know, those isolation moments and the, you know, that happening. I mean, can you talk a little bit about what you foresee and how that needs to be addressed?
Well, so for children and youth, adolescents, you know, and even young adults, attachment is what develops brain architecture. I mean, it's really, our brains are social organs. We can't survive without each other. And, you know, our brains are, and bodies are also experience dependent. So when we feel and perceive that isolation, you know, it can throw us, you know, into this fight flight pathway where we begin to feel super anxious, worried, and then we can start ruminating, you know, whether we have, you know, and again, I want to talk about, because the adult brain is developed, but at, you know, the lack of attachment in children and adolescents is a huge concern. And because neglect, which is that lack of attachment, you know, is really giving the brain the directions and the instructions it needs to live life. So one of the things that, you know, this, when this pandemic is over, we are going to feel, it's kind of like the aftershock of earthquakes. I mean, this is, just because we're all going to be vaccinated does not mean, I mean, I think we're going to see a ramping up of, you know, some significant survival brain states in both educator and students. So, you know, the attachment for the adult, you know, is also extremely critical because, again, we, when we're left with that rumination of our thinking and our feeling and it's recycling, and we don't have a place to share that, then it becomes lodged, almost stuck in our nervous system. And that's why if we can journal, if we can, you know, create like a partner, and I've asked schools to maybe think about creating resiliency partners so that you are, as a staff, you are in touch with each other every, you know, every week you have this kind of therapeutic resiliency partner. You can text them, you can email them, you can leave their favorite coffee drink for them. You can, you know, call each other, but to really pre-op and to set up connections with each other before, you know, you start to feel that, you know, that anxiety of aloneness, which literally can, you know, we, it can be emotionally exhausting. So using, having a staff, this is something we're thinking about that I think would be very powerful, create an outreach template. So as a building, you know, you have a first grade team say, okay, we're going to be in charge of developing emotional resources for everybody in the building. Somebody else might need some, you know, some housing security or food security. So we'll do this. Maybe somebody needs, you know, repair or, you know, therapeutic type of counseling. So creating outreach templates. So that is one of, I think, the biggest challenges for us right now is to stay connected through this crisis. Because if we can do that, and I know we can, and I want to leave on this note today that our brains and bodies are always trying to find homeostasis. They are built to heal and to repair.
We are just out of time. I'm so sorry to cut you off, but I would love to have this conversation much longer. But thank you all so much for joining us today. Jennifer Mitchell and Jody French from Perry Central Schools, thank you both so much.
Thanks for having us.
And Lori Desitel is an assistant professor at Butler University's College of Education. Thank you, Lori.
Thank you.
And Joy Sunday is president of the Indiana Association of School Nurses. Thank you, Joy.
Thank you.
Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Micah Yason. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme song. If you like a podcast of this show or any past show, you can find it anywhere you get your podcasts. Find us on Twitter and Facebook at All In Indiana. I'm Jeannie Lindsay. Thanks for listening. This is All In.